All right, I am Gabe Webb. I am your newest elder. You don't get Wes this morning, and I noticed that none of you left when he said that. I appreciate the vote of confidence on that one. I'm also the youngest elder. Probably wouldn't surprise anybody. I'm only 35 years old. If you think about 35, or at least in the context of my own family, men in my family die in their late 70s. So I'm almost halfway done. So this is me at halftime, right? That's maybe a sobering thought, although you guys all laughed at it. It's kind of a sobering thought to think I'm halfway done. I thought I'd be better at this point in my life. Can anyone else relate maybe to that thought? I thought I'd know more. One of the things I thought I'd know, I'm a father now. I thought you're supposed to know when your dad, when your kids need stitches, right? Like, this has already come up once. Did not need stitches, as it turned out, but I didn't know. Grace knew. But my dad always knew when we needed stitches. One of the things... I got to catch up with my notes real quick here. One of the really cool parts about being me is that as a kid, I got to be with and hang out with, be parented by some really, really great older people. And so I think that actually warped my perceptions of adults a little bit. I thought that they had it all together. I thought that they knew all the stuff that I wanted to know, right? I was very curious as a kid, still am as an adult. And looked up to those people, maybe even a little more than I should have. I also found out that when you get to be an adult and you have kids, you try to sort of hide, right? You hide from your kids the things that you're not sure about, right? You go to great lengths to make sure that they don't see all the questions that you have in your own life. But of course, when you're a kid, you don't know that. And so my impression of growing up and being an adult was that eventually you would sort of hit this point in your walk where you had everything figured out. And so all this stuff, sort of life goes up and down now. You're laughing, I see it. I know, it's silly. I agree that it's a silly thing to think. Good, there's hope for me yet then. That's what you're saying. Thank you. Appreciate that. I thought I would hit a point where when I was a grown-up, right, when I became an adult, that I would understand all of these things, and I'd be good at things that I wasn't good at now, and I'd have it all figured out. So 35 is not old, certainly. It's not really young either. I said it's in the middle, and I am full grown. I've got a wife, I've got kids now, and I don't have it all figured out. That's really the only conclusion I've come to, is that I don't have it all figured out. But I think we can all relate to the fact that there are no smooth spots in life. Everything's up and down, and up and down all the time, sometimes at the same time, seemingly. Little problems, big disasters, triumphs, blessings, illness, and accidents happen to all of us, no matter where we are in our walk from being little to being grown up to being seasoned. We're gonna look at Psalm 107 today. But it's got some things to say about surviving the ups and downs of life. Psalm 107 is a fairly long psalm. There's six different sections. It's an introduction and a closing. Don't worry, we are not going to look at all of them. I'm going to use three of those sections this morning. As we go through these sections, I want you to notice if you can kind of find the why or who is at fault. In each of these stories, when something goes wrong, keep that in mind. Keep that in mind as we read Before I do that, I'm going to get a drink real quick because I'm nervous enough that my mouth is already dry. All right, thank you. All right, Psalm 107, 1 through 9. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story. Those He redeemed from the hands of the foe, those He gathered from the lands, from east and west, from north and south. Some wandered in desert wastelands, finding no way to a city where they could settle. They were hungry and thirsty, and their lives ebbed away. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and He delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way to a city where they could settle. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for mankind. For He satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. Okay, so I asked you to figure out who or what was at fault here. And I trapped you a little bit because I can't figure it out. In the first, but guess what's in the teacher's mind? Well, you guessed wrong because I'm not sure. This first section, it's not real clear. Did these people do something wrong that got them out in the desert? If they did, I can't find it. I'm not sure what it is. Did someone else do something wrong that got them out in the desert? Possible. Also not sure. Welcome to life. We don't get simple explanations of why things are, why things go wrong, why they happen. But we do know that regardless of the why, these people found themselves in a bad spot, didn't they? Wandering in the desert's not necessarily an unpleasant activity, but when you don't get a choice in the matter, these people were in a bad spot. But at that lowest point, what did they do, and what was God's response? Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble. He delivered them from their distress. He led them by a straight way to a city where they could settle. And they let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love, His wonderful deeds for mankind. For He satisfies the thirsty and fills the hungry with good things. In their desperation, they cried out to God, and He saved them. Keep that in mind. Let us continue. All right, this is the next section, Psalm 107, 10 to 16. I think you'll find a little more clarity in this one. Some sat in darkness, in utter darkness, prisoners suffering in iron chains because they rebelled against God's commands and despised the plans of the Most High. So He subjected them to bitter labor. They stumbled and there was no one to help. They cried to the Lord in their trouble, and He saved them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness, the utter darkness, and broke away their chains. Let them give thanks to the Lord for His unfailing love and His wonderful deeds for mankind. For He breaks down gates of bronze and cuts through bars of iron. Our question's not as hard to answer this time, is it? It's not a lot of wiggle room here. These people ended up in prison because they rebelled against God's commands, and they got punished for it. I've never been to prison for any of the commands of God that I've broken, but I have broken them. I've broken some, and I've been in trouble for it. I'm sure none of you guys probably don't do that kind of stuff, but I have, and probably will again, unfortunately. Who did these people cry out to? They cried out to the Lord. But wait a minute. They broke God's commands, and God punished them. But where did they go for relief? They went to the Lord, didn't they? Keep that in mind, too. All right, this is my last of three sections that we're going to use from Psalms. The next section that we're skipping is very similar to the one we just read. This one's a little longer. This is verses 23 to 32. Some went out on the sea in ships. There were merchants on the mighty waters. They saw the works of the Lord, his wonderful deeds in the deep, for he spoke and stirred up a tempest that lifted high the waves. They mounted up to the heavens and went down to the depths. In their peril, their courage melted away. They reeled and staggered like drunkards. They were at their wits' end. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he brought them out of their distress. He stilled the storm to a whisper. The waves of the sea were hushed. They were glad when it grew calm, for he guided them, and he guided them to their desired haven. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. Let them exalt him in the assembly of the people and praise him in the council of the elders. Okay, so whose fault is it this time? It's another trick question. I don't know the answer to this one either. Is it the sailors' fault that they were in danger? I don't think so. They're just doing their job. Some of us have dangerous jobs. Unfortunately, in the world we live in, lots of jobs that you would not think would be dangerous can be. They were also subject to bad weather. We know some things about that in this part of the world, unfortunately. Whose fault is the weather? Who do we blame the weather on? Jared? Sorry, my brother's laughing at me from the audience. But notice where these people went in their trouble. They went to the Lord, didn't they? They cried out to the Lord, and what did he do? He delivered them again. And what was their response? It's verse 31. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. I think there are some themes emerging here, and I'm going to try to illustrate them. With a graph. I know that seems funny, but the first time I ever taught from this passage, I was teaching in a Bible study, kind of in my previous life in Oklahoma, and most of the people that were there were bankers. Which is a strange crew, by the way. Sorry for any of you who are bankers. But bankers love numbers, and they love graphs and charts, and that's sort of how they understand the world. And so I thought of this way to kind of explain it to them that would both make sense and hopefully be memorable. Aaron loaned me the world's largest Sharpie to draw with, so let's see how this goes. For some of you, it may have been a while since you've been in school where they would explain some of these things, but I will try to make that clear. We are going to graph the relationship between love and time. So I'm going to put love on the y-axis. We're going to put time on the x-axis. Shelley Livingston, I hear you laughing. Okay. A couple of things about this graph. For those of you who've been a while since you've been in school, the arrows mean that those lines are infinite. This one goes forever up, that one goes forever that direction. These mean that the top part of the graph is not to the same scale as the lower part of the graph. Okay? So think of 1, 2, 3, 4, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. Okay? We're good? Okay. I'm going to put two lines on this graph. First line represents the Lord's relationship to you. Okay? It's infinite in both directions. It's a long ways above ours. It doesn't go up and down. Okay, this is our line. It's got a starting point, because we have a starting point. But we don't have an ending point, do we? We're infinite in that direction. Even if you die, of course, your soul lives forever. Part of you that is created in God's image does not have an end. But our line's not flat, is it? It goes up and down. Our relationship with God goes up and down as we survive life. And there are a lot of things that... So in the stories, right, you can identify kind of the cycle, can't you? You know when these people cry out to God. You know when He saves them. You know when they say thank you. And then they sort of inevitably get tipped over the edge again, and they go through the cycle again. There are lots and lots and lots of reasons that tip us down the next hill, aren't there? Many of those are not under our control. Some of them are, but like I said, we're vulnerable to the weather. We're vulnerable to the sins of others. We live in a fallen world that is not perfect, where accidents happen, bad people do bad things, good people do bad things. Which is even more, perhaps even more dislocating. But no matter the reasons involved, the correct answer when you hit that point is to cry out to the Lord. If you spent some time in church, maybe you would then say, well, but if you cried out to the Lord when you were up here, maybe the bad things wouldn't happen to you. That is, in fact, not correct. There is no secret Christian formula to iron all the ups and downs out of your life and to make this line straight. Just straight up. It does not exist. Do not waste your time looking for it. Okay? One thing I do want you to notice about this lower line, though, is that even though it goes up and down and up and down, and you know, for some people, maybe it goes more up and down than others. You occasionally have to take my brother's pulse to make sure he's alive. I think maybe his moves up and down a little slower. But regardless of how that works, which direction is it trending? Is it trending up or trending down? It's trending up. What's the best you can hope for? The best you can hope for is that you live through life, you never escape the ups and downs, but over time, as you move through that up and down cycle, cry out to the Lord, give thanks when rescue comes. You get closer to Him. That's the best thing that can happen to you. Are we clear? Can everybody see? You guys way over here, you can see? Awesome, perfect, okay. I was gonna have to pick it up and show it to everybody, but I'll spare you that. 3 points I wanna make about, because every good sermon has 3 points, right? So here's your first of three points. The first one is don't get stuck. As you move through this cycle, don't get stuck. I ran across a quote from Winston Churchill in another context this week, and I decided this would be a good spot for it. And he's one of those people that lots of quotes get attributed to, so maybe this comes with a grain of salt. But he said, if you're going through hell, keep going. Don't stop there. Continue to process your life by crying out to the Lord when life knocks you down and giving Him thanks when relief comes. Like I said before, there's no secret formula for ironing the ups and downs out of your life. And don't think that the help God offers is all church stuff. Okay? When your child breaks a leg, what do? Take him to the doctor. Well, all of the ups and downs in this chart come with sort of mental and emotional damage, don't they? And we accumulate scars as we go through life. So bad things happen to you. They have doctors for that too. Okay? Sometimes I think people in church underutilize those things because we are quick to pray, but sometimes slow to seek the help that God has already provided for us. In that area, okay? Don't hesitate. Find a good reference. Find a counselor. Find a psychologist. Find a psychiatrist. You may need a little chemical help, too, to get through some of these things, okay? Counseling has been very important to me in my own personal life. I would recommend a good counselor to everybody. Don't be ashamed of that. God set it up for you. It's already there for you to take advantage of. Okay? Don't get stuck. Trust the process. Cry out to God. Say thank you when He comes. If you're going through hell, don't stop. Okay? Point number two, don't waste your energy trying to make your line flat. I alluded to that earlier. We're going to talk about it some more. Some people tend to be a little more even-keeled. Their line doesn't go up and down as much. Some people aren't actually like, I would put myself in this category. I'm not actually like that, but I like to show everybody a nice flat line, right? I don't want you guys to think that I'm up and down about stuff, but I am on the inside. Christian life is meant to be lived in community. We apparently think that's important in this church because we put it in the name, Grace Community Church. When people in my community, talking about you guys, when you guys suffer, it should and does affect me. Okay. I feel it too. Now, depending on your proximity to me, I may feel it more or less because I don't know everybody here, right? But if you hide it from me, I can't help you. And the people, or more likely, the people sitting next to you can't help you. Your friends can't help you. Your pastors can't help you. Your elders can't help you. If they don't know what's going on, you've cut yourself off from an important source of help, okay? I would like to balance that carefully against that sometimes people also have a tendency to tell everybody everything, right? By the way, that's not beneficial either. We have one extreme over here of the person who puts lots of time and effort into making their life appear perfect, as if they need no help at all. And there's the other extreme over here where the person says, I'm just trying to be real, and they put everything out there. Neither of these is good, okay? The balance is probably somewhere in the middle. And you guys know from listening to Wes that anything that has balance requires tension, right? Because it continually has to be adjusted in the way that you deal with it. Congratulations. This is not one of those things that you get to figure out one time. You get to figure this process out again and again and again and again. Let's see. Let me catch up with myself here. There's one. I planned a rabbit to chase, right? In my sermon, it's about social media. I would consider it an ill of the world that we live in. People do the same thing on social media as they do in their actual life. They curate what they post because they want you to think that their life is perfect. Or everything goes out there to everyone Everything gets broadcast in the clear on the internet. Neither of those things is healthy, okay? Cultivate meaningful relationships within the body of Christ. Make friends with the people in this room and the people who aren't here, of course, but our church, right? Make friends within that body. Those are the people that you talk to when these things happen to you, okay? Don't isolate yourself behind a screen and hide from what I would consider real or face-to-face friendship, okay? Be friends with the kind of people who will check on you, who will take you out to lunch, who will help you with a project. If you don't have those kind of friends, then be that friend. Be that friend and see what happens. Because they'll show up. Either way, keep these things in balance, but don't waste your life trying to put on an appearance. Okay? Last point. You're a work in progress. This line, like if we could all somehow graph our own lines, right? They'd all look different, wouldn't they? They've got different peaks and different valleys, different causes, different experiences. But it's that line is one of the main things that God uses to shape me into the person that He wants me to be. And you say, but hold on, Gabe. That line includes your own sin. Yes, it does. Any of the things that we talked about, God can redeem to shape you into the person that He wants you to be. Tornadoes, divorces, your mistakes, your missed opportunities, relationships you messed up, fear, mental illness, sickness, all of it. There's nothing that you will experience that is beyond God's ability to redeem it. I promise. That being said, I don't know how it all works together. I don't know why some people experience terrible things and some people seemingly don't. It's one of those things I occasionally keeps me up at night, wondering why some people do some things. I can look at my own life and I think surely all the things that have happened to me can't be according to God's will. There's no way. But I don't know. I don't know why God allows things. The older I get, the less confident I am in my ability to discern God's will. It's not what you wanted to hear from an elder, I suspect. But it's true. The only thing that I am confident in is that the Lord will redeem me. He will redeem my actions. He will redeem my decisions. He will redeem my life. And in the end, the way that He will be successful in shaping me to the person that He wants me to be. I don't know how long it's going to take. Probably a lot longer for me than for you, I suspect. But I sort of think about this process like a sculptor. He's working on a piece of granite, and at first, it's just a big rock. But over time, that rock gets shaped. But the rock doesn't get shaped without adversity. It gets pieces of it broken off, right? And sanded off. And sometimes those pieces are big, and they hurt when they leave. Sometimes those pieces are small, and you get a little bump on a course correction, and you say, thank you for that. But in the end, the Lord will shape you into the person that He's got in mind for you to be. It doesn't happen without your input. It doesn't happen without your effort. Okay? That's partly your responsibility too. But the Lord is faithful, and He will shape you. In closing, you guys were waiting for that, weren't you? In closing, let's go back to the beginning of the psalm. Give thanks to the Lord, for He is good. His love endures forever. Let the redeemed of the Lord tell their story, those He redeemed from the hands of the foe, those He gathered from the lands from east and west and north and south. If you are a believer this morning, you are redeemed of the Lord. You have a responsibility. You must say so. There was a gentleman in my church growing up. His name was Les Kintzer. He's an older gentleman at that time, has since passed away. I grew up in a friend's church, and since we didn't actually take communion with the elements, there was always a time during the service where people could share. And Les would stand up and say, "Let the redeemed of the Lord say so." And people would share what they had, what was being redeemed in their own lives. And that made an impression on me. I was just a kid, first time I heard that. I haven't been to that church for a long time, and Les has been dead for 10 years probably. But it is our responsibility to say so when we are redeemed. I told you before that this line's different for everybody, and it's true. But sometimes we have common experiences, don't we? You go through things that someone else needs to hear about because they're going through the same thing. That's not natural for everybody. Some of you like to talk to people and some of you don't. I get it. This is terrifying, by the way. Right? This is me. This is me saying so. This is not the context that everybody has to do it in. Mostly you get to do it in conversation with your friend. But you are responsible to say so. You are redeemed. All of you are redeemed. All of you have things that you have survived and processed and figured out and put behind you, and there are people in your life who need to hear about it. So say so. Find a way, find an opportunity to let people know. It builds our faith when we tell those stories from our own life. It builds our faith when we hear those stories from other people's lives. Your children and your grandchildren need to hear them so that they know God is still at work in this world. Not just in the world that was, not just in Bible stories, but in the world that we live in right now. Everyone struggles. The Lord is faithful to redeem. That's really all I know. In the book of John, chapter 16, Jesus spent some time talking to his disciples, and he's sort of given them a warning. He's given them a heads up about some of the things that are going to happen to them after he leaves. And at the very end of that chapter, we have John 16:33, which is a commonly quoted verse. I'm sure you've heard it before. It says, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world." Stand, please. Now may the God of peace himself sanctify you entirely. May your spirit and soul and body be preserved complete, without blame, at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. Faithful is he who calls you, and he also will bring it to pass. Amen.